Maybe you wonder, of course you do, why I'm here this morning. Actually, the reason is that I was reading your newspaper yesterday and came across the title for the sermon this morning, something about a loyal coward. And I knew right away, it's another sermon about me. And I've had it up to about here on sermons about me and preachers and teachers and authors and these people that have been picking me apart for the last 2,000 years and putting me in the wrong light. So I decided that I'd come and speak for myself this morning, and this time get the story straight for you. All right? Now, I also figured I'd probably do a lot better job than that Andrewson guy you usually have here. And I do need to set the record straight on one thing, though, before telling you the story, and that is that it's true. I mean, what John wrote. Facts are straight. I did it. I denied Jesus 3 times. I'm not proud of that. But that's actually kind of why I'm here today. I want to tell you to beware. Beware, because if I, Peter, could fail, then so you too can fail. Well, actually, there's two sides to the story, and I hope you'll not think that I lack humility when I tell you, first of all, that I did have my virtues, you know. I'm so often cast in the worst of light. But I did have my virtues. I was a leader of the disciples. I mean, you could ask anyone. Ask Bartholomew or Nathaniel or Peter or James, rather, or John or any of those. In fact, you could even ask Judas or Jesus himself, and they'd all tell you that I was a leader. A leader from the very beginning. In fact, do you remember when the others were fumbling around trying to describe who Jesus was? I was the one who spoke out and said, Jesus, you are the Christ, the Son of God. I was the one who oft-times was the spokesman for all of the other disciples. Now, I'll admit, there were times when I was quick and didn't think things through and didn't speak quite the right words the way you would, but you've had time to think it through and analyze it. You've had time to figure out what the right word should be. I didn't. I had to speak quickly, and someone had to say something, and that's part of what a leader does. You speak the best words you can at the time. And I was a leader not just in terms of words, but of actions as well. I went with Jesus as a representative of all the other disciples up the Mount of Transfiguration when the glory of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, was revealed. I was there. Remember that I was there. When Jesus came walking across the Lake of Galilee, everyone else dumbfounded in the boat. But I took the action. I was the leader. I stepped over the side in an act of faith, and I too walked on the water, my eyes fixed on Jesus. A leader all the way through. But leadership comes with a price. Sometimes a high price. Leaders are in the limelight. They're analyzed and scrutinized. Their faults are magnified. And so that's been done with me, I'll have you know, for 2,000 years of history. People have looked at me and scrutinized and analyzed and magnified my faults and my problems 100 times over. Listen, other disciples failed as much as I. It's just that they weren't the leaders that I was, and so their faults have not been scrutinized as mine have been. Indeed, we leaders sometimes pay very high prices for our failures. They never let me forget what happened the night that I denied Jesus. For the rest of my life, the word traveled. It went like an epidemic, first to the community of disciples, and then throughout Jerusalem, throughout Palestine, all throughout the empire. It seemed like everyone everywhere knew that I'd done what I did. In fact, until the day I was crucified, I would walk down the street and there would be smart-alecky people who, cruelly and unkindly, as I would walk by, would shout, "Cock-a-doodle-doo, Peter," and laugh until my heart just broke with reminders of what I had done. What I ask of you this morning is that you give me some consideration, that you treat me with some kindness, that you try to see things a little bit from my point of view. I was a leader, but most of all, I was a lover. Oh, how I love Jesus. I loved him. I loved him. I loved him. I loved him with all of my heart. I wanted to be with him every minute. I seldom left his side. That's why you find my name on almost every page of the Gospels. I was always there, as close to him as I could be. In fact, that's why I got into so much trouble that night. The others, have you ever wondered where the others were? Well, Judas, of course, you know what happened to him. But the other 10, you don't find a record of their behavior in the 4 Gospels. Well, I'll tell you what happened. When Jesus was arrested, they fled. They went westward. They went eastward, rather, over the Mount of Olives to Bethany. They sought a hideout there, protection. They went away from the city of Jerusalem. It was only one who loved Jesus enough to stick with him. And you know who that one was? I was that one. I loved him that much. In fact, if I had not loved him so much, I would not have followed him into Jerusalem. And if I had not followed him into Jerusalem, then I wouldn't have been in the high priest's court. And if I had not been in the high priest's court, then I wouldn't have been tempted. And if I hadn't been tempted, I wouldn't have denied it. So in a manner of speaking, it was my love that got me into trouble. And then add to that that I was indeed loyal to him. Now, you may think it totally out of place that I speak of loyalty in view of what you have read from John's record. You might think that that is the most absurd of assertions that possibly could be made. But remember some of the other times. I mean, my whole story wasn't just the few moments of that night. There were many other times when I was fiercely loyal to Jesus, even that night up in the Garden of Gethsemane. No one else came to Jesus' defense. You laugh at the way I inadequately drew my sword and attacked Malchus, but at least I did it. I was ready to die, honestly ready to die for Jesus. I'm not foolish. I knew that I couldn't take on 600 armed guards and soldiers. But I was willing to take on as many as I could. I was willing to protect Jesus, if need be, for only a few moments so that the hurt of him could be delayed a little bit of time. I was loyal. I had valor. I had courage. Was willing to die for him. You see, people have called me a coward because when that little slave girl asked me if I knew Jesus, I just melted away. I gave in. I succumbed. But don't remember me just for that. Think of the other times. I was loyal indeed. Not a coward at all. If anything, I was the only one of Jesus' followers and disciples who acted with courage and valor. You wonder why I've come to tell you all this. It's not to defend myself. It's not to make me look good when others have made me to look bad. No, I've resolved that centuries ago. I've committed that to God. I've long decided that what other people say and think about me is not the most important of all. I've confessed my faults and sins, and I've been forgiven, and God has told me that. And so it is his measure of my life that I count to be most important. No, that's not the reason I'm here. The reason I'm here is with the hope and the prayer and the expectation that somehow from my faults, from my denials, from my failures, you might learn and you might not travel down the path that I have gone. The reason I'm here is to tell you that I was not the worst and the weakest of the disciples. Please understand what I'm saying. Not bragging, but in a sense, I was the best and the strongest of the disciples. And if I denied Jesus, and if I failed Jesus, might that not also happen to you? Do you think that you are stronger than I? Do you think that you are better than I? Do you think that you are exempt from the temptations that I experience? Do you think that if you were to walk in my sandals, that you would not deny him also? And so what I'd like to tell you this morning is about the dangers to which I succumbed. Oh, so dearly hoping that telling you about it will mean that you will not repeat my sins. Oh, how foolishly I stepped into some very, very serious yet common dangers. They should have easily been foreseen. Like the place, for example. I was in the wrong place. I never should have turned to warm myself at that fire. Here, Jesus was about to suffer the worst of everything. And I was concerned about my comfort. My toes were cold. My hands were cold. There I was in the distant part of the courtyard, rubbing my hands together and prancing about to get myself warm. And I looked across the courtyard, and across on the other side there was a charcoal fire. And there were the people warming themselves, and I could see the glow of the coals. And I thought, what difference would it make if I just went over there and stood in the crowd? I could get warm. And so as inconspicuously as I could, I made my way over and I nudged my way through the people and I warmed my hands at the fire. But you see, instead of being with him, I had moved to be with them. It was a terrible danger. It was terrible what happened there around that fire. If I had stood somewhere else, if I had been willing to stay cold for just an hour longer, if I had occupied myself in some other way, then perhaps I would not have been asked. And if not asked, then not tempted. And if not tempted, then I would have not denied him. And had I not denied him, I would not have sinned. Now look, I know that the wrong place for you is not going to be at a charcoal fire. And I know that there's no biblical argument from the law that says that you can't do that. There was nothing technically wrong with where I went or what I did. But for me, it was the wrong place. The place where I ought not to have been and the place where I succumbed to temptation. For you, not a charcoal fire, but for you, maybe a singles bar. For you, not a charcoal fire, but for you, perhaps an office Christmas party. For you, not a charcoal fire, but perhaps a pot party. For you, not a charcoal fire, but perhaps a gathering of Christians that you know will carnally dip into gossip and dissent. Oh, learn the lesson from me. Taste not the bitterness that I have tasted. Avoid, beware the wrong places. And then add to the list the overconfidence. That overconfidence that Mark so well described. Oh, I was so sure of myself then. I was so confident. Here just hours before, right after the Last Supper, Jesus had said to all of us, "You will fall away." Not me, I thought. Oh, no. No, I wanted Jesus to know for sure that I stood firm, even if everyone else might defect. And so I said, "Jesus, even though they all fall away, I will not." Kind of had a grin on my face when I said it. I was so proud. Then Jesus turned and singled me out of the crowd and looked me in the eye and said, "Peter, before the cock crows, you will deny me three times." And then I defied a prophecy from the Son of God himself. I said, "Jesus, if I must die with you, I will not deny you." I'll tell you how bitter became the taste of those words in my mouth. How bitter, bitter. I thought I knew so much. I thought I was so strong. I thought I was so smart. I thought I had everything under control. I had forgotten, for the moment at least, I had forgotten the words that Jesus had said. John gave them to you in the 15th chapter of his book. When Jesus said, "Without me, you can do nothing." I thought that I could do it by myself. That's not quite that clear cut. I thought that Jesus had given me the strength, and his strength plus my strength meant that I could pull it off. I could stand firm even if no one else did. Oh, learn my lesson. Learn my lesson. That the point at which we oftentimes think we are the strongest is the point at which we are most vulnerable and weakest. Now, maybe one of you here this morning is a theologian, a Bible student. You've studied the Bible for a lifetime. And so you think that you know the Bible so well that you can never make a mistake. Listen well. That overconfidence may well be the beginning of your fall into heresy. Or maybe there's another of you who is a successful business person. Maybe you own your own business and you've developed it over the years and you have money in your pocket and things are going great and you can defy economic reverses and all kinds of things. You have control of the situation. Don't be so overconfident. That's just the way I was. That's just what I thought. Remember what Jesus said, without me you can do nothing. Maybe you're a young person and you've got health and you've got your future and you've got good education and a good job and everything's going your way and you think that you have the world by the tail. Everything. Just the way you want it. That's the same thing. You're going the same way I went. Or maybe you're an athlete or an educator or maybe you're a musician or whatever it is that you think that you have everything that you can control. Beware. Oh, please beware. Beware of overconfidence because it is a step to spiritual failure. Well, the list could go on far more than the time that you have. But surely on it, God would include, even if I would forget, the danger of a lack of prayer. I'm not sure I've got this all figured out right theologically. But here Jesus had predicted that I would deny him 3 times. I think he wanted me not to. I think he wanted that his prediction would not come true. I think he wanted to help me. Now, the reason I say that is, well, it's what's recorded by Matthew in chapter 26 of his telling of the story. Do you remember when there in the Garden of Gethsemane, he looked at all of us disciples and he said, "Watch and pray that you enter not into temptation." Now, Matthew doesn't tell you, but when he said that to all the others, he was looking at me. I think he was mostly telling me. He was warning me in a subtle and yet a direct way. He was warning me that if I were to pray, that I would not sin. I had heard Jesus tell us to pray so many times before. I didn't think much of it. Didn't think it through, actually. I was tired. I was sleepy. It had been a long day, a busy day. It had been a hard day. My body was just worn out. I figured I could sleep for an hour and then I could pray later. I mean, it wasn't that I was rejecting praying. I wasn't rejecting his advice. I wasn't denying what he was telling me. I was postponing. Oh, what a mistake it was. What an awful mistake. Learn my lesson. Learn the lesson that the time to pray is before the temptation comes. Learn the lesson that nothing is more important than that time of prayer. Learn the lesson that nothing must take precedence over it. Now, I don't know if you're into taking my advice or not, but I'll give you some. You can do with it as you please. I'd say, if I were you, what I would do now when you live, is that I'd get up early every morning and I'd spend an hour every day praying and being with Jesus Christ. I wouldn't let anything get in the way. I mean, if I had to change my work schedule, if I had to go to bed earlier, if I had to get up at some ridiculous hour, it wouldn't make any difference. I would do it every day. I wouldn't let anything get in the way of that. And I wouldn't let that be enough. You see, I've learned the lesson. I would have every day divided up so that there would always be some times, maybe at lunchtime or dinner time or during a break or going to work or coming back from work, there would be times all day long when I would pray. And I wouldn't make any decisions without asking his advice. I wouldn't go any directions without first committing it to him. And most of all, I would never enter into any new danger without first building up a protective wall of prayer around me before I'd go into it. You know, you people in the 20th century, you've got house insurance and car insurance and life insurance and health insurance. None of those are anywhere near as important as prayer insurance. That you pray before the temptations come. Learn from me. Learn from me. Learn from me. The huge danger of a lack of prayer. And I'll tell you from my own experience that if you fail to pray, you're sure to fall. Well, now, see, I've mentioned to you about a wrong place. that I mentioned to you about overconfidence, terrible danger, and then lack of prayer. Let me just give you one more. One that you might not think is very important. In fact, John didn't. He left it out of his gospel, but I think it's important. That's distance. Luke thought it was important. There in chapter 22 of his gospel, when he was telling the story, he said that they seized Jesus and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house, and Peter followed at a distance. Let me be a little defensive again. At least I followed. The others weren't following. At least I followed. The others had run away. They were in hiding. Oh, but there was Jesus. And I was at a distance, as far back as I could get, keeping the measure between him and me as great as I possibly could. I wanted to keep my options open. I figured I could still be identified with him, and if everything went well, then everything went well, and I'd be with Jesus. And if things didn't go well at all, then I wouldn't know him. I figured that if I got too close, people would think I was a fanatic. They would think that I was overzealous. I might get into trouble if I was too close. This was the safe place to be. How pathetically wrong I was. That was the dumbest of all judgments I made. For if I had been closer, if I had been near to Jesus, then I wouldn't have been in the wrong place. Then my confidence would have been tied to him rather than to myself. Then I would have been in continual communication with him, and there would have been no lack of prayer. Then I would not have been tempted, and then I would not have sinned. You know, some of you do the same thing that I did. It's just as dumb for you as it was for me. You keep your distance. I know you do. You slip in on a Sunday morning and you slip out. You keep your distance from involvement. You keep your distance from Jesus Christ throughout the week at work and at home, all the places you go. You don't want someone to think that you're a fanatic, that you're overly zealous. You too, you want to keep your options open. You want Jesus when you need him, but you don't want to be embarrassed by him when you think things might go better without it. Oh, again, learn from me. Learn from me. Don't be stupid. Don't be dumb as I was dumb. The safe place, the best place, is as close to Jesus as you can get. The danger is not in the closeness. The danger is in the distance. Well, you know the story. You know what happened to me. I was warming my hands by the fire. That little slave girl, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years old. She asked me if I'd been with Jesus, and you don't understand it quite in your language, but the way she phrased it, she didn't even think I had been with Jesus. She was no threat. She wasn't making any accusation. But there I crumbled, and I said, I don't know him. I'm not part of the party of Jesus of Nazareth. And I denied him once. And then as I stood around the fire, they got into a conversation, and they were all talking back and forth and saying to one another who belongs to Jesus and who doesn't. And someone said to me, sort of just as a passing remark, you're part of Jesus' group, aren't you? And I let it go that time. And the conversation went on, and then it happened again, and I let it go, and I kept letting it go, but finally someone put me on the spot and said, well, you've been asked several times, you haven't said anything, are you, aren't you? You belong with this man that's being tried in there? And I said, no, I don't know him. I'm not part of the group. Denied him twice. The third time was really quite different. The first two was no threat. They didn't know me. But the third time, that was a relative of Malchus, the one whom I had wounded at Gethsemane, and he had been up there. He had seen me in the bright moonlight. He knew who I was. He knew that I did belong to Jesus. And he made the accusation right out there in front of everybody. They all heard it. So this time I had to convince them all. So I swore and I cursed and I damned and I said, I don't know him at all. I don't belong to that Jesus. And the last syllable and breath had slipped over my lips. Cock crow. My heart broke. It was just as Jesus said it would be. And I denied him. Jesus was right. Without him, I could do nothing. I denied Jesus, but Jesus redeemed me. He redeemed me, and he restored me. He forgave my sins. I, Peter, who should have known better, who made an obviously wrong and willful choice, he forgave me and he remade my life. And he trusted me again. I thought he'd never trust me again. He let me be his spokesman at the inauguration of his church at Pentecost. And when I spoke, thousands of people became Christians. He inspired me through his Holy Spirit so that I wrote some of the books of your New Testament. I became the ambassador and apostle of Jesus Christ to the Jews and to some Gentiles as well. I traveled far and near. He restored me. He redeemed me. Now I've got a last word of advice and then I must go. If you've never denied Jesus, don't. Beware of the dangers. Learn from me. Never deny him. But if you have, confess that sin and accept his forgiveness and his redemption, and his restoration. He'll remake your life. He'll change you. He'll make you his spokesman. He'll take the broken clay and make out of it a masterpiece. He will change you from traitor to one who is loyal. He will make you from being overconfident and broken to one who trusts him explicitly. He will make out of the ruins of your life the very best. Go to Jesus, who takes those who deny him and redeems them and restores them and makes you whole.